You're listening to the Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper. Ladies and gentlemen, if you don't have pen and paper by your side tonight, shame on you. You will regret it for the rest of your life. Get it now. Make sure you have pen and paper tomorrow night, Thursday night, and Friday night, because this is the week we're going to fry the enemy. And I mean fry them. Did you know that June 16th, 1983, under Executive Order 12425, entitled International Criminal Police Organizations, Ronald Reagan signed this executive order, which literally gives international criminal police organizations immunity from all laws of the United States of America. Ladies and gentlemen, what you're going to hear tonight, tomorrow night, Thursday night, and Friday night is going to anger you, probably to the point of exploding. You're going to find that we've been betrayed, that the United States really does not exist, except in your minds. The Constitution was scrapped many, many years ago. There has been the waging of World War III against not only the people of the United States, but the people of the world, in order to bring about a one-world totalitarian socialist government. The symbol of international socialism, ladies and gentlemen, in case you've wondered why I continue to play the rose on this broadcast, is a red rose. Bill Clinton has been photographed in the Oval Office holding up one red rose. So has Fidel Castro, and Khrushchev, and Gorbachev, and Molotov, and I can go on and on and on and on. Lenin, etc. Under this executive order, neither state nor federal law prohibits participation by the United States National Central Bureau of Interpol in the computerized information exchange system, and though federal disclosure laws, etc., must be complied with, the Bureau may, but need not comply with state restrictions on the use of data or state requests with respect to disclosure of data. Do you understand the consequences of what I'm telling you? Under Section 286E-13, approval of fund pledged to sell gold to provide resources for reserve account of Enhanced Structural Adjustment Facility Trust. If Federal Reserve notes are money, why is the United States paying its debts in gold? The Secretary of the Treasury is authorized to instruct the United States Executive Director of the Fund to vote to approve the fund's pledge to sell, if needed, up to 3 million ounces of the fund's gold to restore the resources of the reserve account of the Enhanced Structural Adjustment Facility Trust to a level that would be sufficient to meet obligations of the trust payable to lenders which have made loans to the loan account of the trust that have been used for the purpose of financing programs to fund members previously in arrears to the fund. In other words, as always, we're bailing out with 3 million ounces of gold people who cannot pay their debts. I, William J. Clinton, President of the United States of America, find that the proliferation of nuclear, biological, and chemical weapons and of the means of delivering such weapons constitutes an unusual and extraordinary threat to the national security, foreign policy, and economy of the United States, and hereby declare a national emergency to deal with that threat. Executive Order 12868 of September 30th, 1993. You'd better understand what I'm telling you, and you'd better understand what that executive order just said in the context of the rest of this program, ladies and gentlemen. It is important. Executive Order 12359 of April 22, 1982, Section 1, the multinational force and observers in which the United States participates pursuant to Section 138 of Public Law 97-51 and Public Law 97-132 is hereby designated as a public international organization entitled to enjoy the privileges, exemptions, and immunities conferred by the International Organization's Immunities Acts. Also, ladies and gentlemen, the United States Treasury Department was established under the Treaty of Bretton Woods, wherein it specifically states that the Treasury Department comes under the International Monetary Fund, an international organization under the United Nations, and the Secretary of the Treasury which up until recently was Lloyd Benson, cannot be paid by the United States of America, but instead receives his remuneration from the International Monetary Fund. That makes the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms an international police organization exempt from the laws of the United States of America, and that explains what has been happening in recent months and years. It also explains how the president is being held hostage in the White House by a security force called the Secret Service, which owes its allegiance to the United Nations and not the United States of America. Multinational force, Public Law 97-132, Section 23, Privileges and Immunities of the Multinational Force Organization. The MFO shall enjoy the status, privileges, and immunities accorded in Article 2 of the Convention on the Privileges and Immunities of the United Nations, hereinafter the Convention. The provisions of Article 2 of the Convention on the Privileges and Immunities of the United Nations, hereinafter the Convention. The provisions of Article 2 of the Convention shall also apply to the property, funds, and assets of participating states used in the receiving state in connection with the activities of the MFO. Such participating states may not require immovable property in the receiving state without agreement of the government of the receiving state. The government of the receiving state recognizes that the right of the MFO to import free of duty equipment for the MFO and provisions, supplies, and other goods for the exclusive use of members of the MFO includes the right of the MFO to establish, maintain, and operate at headquarters, camps, and posts, service institutes, providing amenities for the members of the MFO. Ladies and gentlemen, the equipment coming into the United States from foreign nations is equipment belonging to the MFO of the United Nations. Locally recruited personnel, 37. The MFO may recruit locally such personnel as required. The authorities of the receiving state will, upon the request of the Director General, assist the MFO in the recruitment of such personnel. Sympathetic consideration will be given by the Director General in the recruitment of local personnel to requests or observations of authorities of the receiving state in order to avoid any adverse effect on the local economy. The terms and conditions of employment for locally recruited personnel should be prescribed by the Director General and shall generally, to the extent practicable, be no less favorable than the practice prevailing in the receiving state. And on and on and on. Public Law 97-132. Ladies and gentlemen, now, here we have Executive Order 11490. Under Part 3, Department of the Treasury, it states specifically that the Secretary of the Treasury shall develop policies, plans, and procedures for the performance of emergency functions, not normal functions, emergency functions, with respect to the following, and it goes through an awful lot of things that would just frost you, ladies and gentlemen. But number 12, maintenance of the central government accounting and financial reporting system, administration of customs laws, tax laws, and laws on control of alcohol, alcoholic beverages, tobacco, and firearms, suppression of counterfeiting and forgery of government security stamps, coins, and currency, protection of the president and the vice president and other designated persons, etc., etc., etc. Now, don't go away, because what you're going to hear tonight is probably some of the most important information you'll ever hear in your life. That goes doubly for tomorrow night, triply for Thursday night, and quadruply for Friday.
Thank you.
Hardbound book, ladies and gentlemen, a thick book entitled Review of United Nations Charter Collection of Documents, Senate Document 87, 83rd Congress, Second Session. On page 461, paragraph 99, disclosure and verification of armed forces and armaments, United States proposal in the Disarmament Commission, April 5th. 1952. That's 1952. The General Assembly resolution calling for regulation, limitation, and balanced reduction of all armed forces and armaments directs that the Commission be guided by a number of principles, including the following. Operative paragraph 3A. In a system of guaranteed disarmament, there must be progressive disclosure and verification on a continuing basis of all armed forces, including paramilitary, security, and police forces, and all armaments, including atomic. Such verification must be based on effective international inspection to ensure the adequacy and accuracy of the information disclosed. This inspection be carried out in accordance with the decisions of the International Control Organ to be established. It's in effect. We have Russian observers on United States soil supervising the disarmament of the United States of America as of this moment, and they've been here for a long time. Remember last night you heard that according to a newspaper article in the Cleveland Plain Dealer, United States atomic submarine commanding officers were ordered by the president to turn in their launch keys. On page 462, under A, extent of disclosure and verification, paragraph 2, the disclosure must cover all armed forces of every kind, including paramilitary, security, and police forces, and all armaments, including atomic. 3, the verification of armed forces and armaments must likewise cover all armed forces of every kind, including paramilitary, security, and police forces, and all armaments, including atomic. Now, ladies and gentlemen, we go to a document entitled Disarmament, Two Approaches, a Comparison, United States and the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, Disarmament Proposals. Now, understand what I'm telling you. This is a joint proposal between the United States and the USSR, the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics. The breakup of the Soviet Union was not an accident. It is a deceit. This was published by the United States Arms Control and Disarmament Agency, November 1961, ladies and gentlemen, November 1961. And this outlines the entire plan to disarm the world, including the United States of America and its people. Disarmament goals. A free world under the rule of law with procedures for the peaceful settlement of disputes. The United States, a free, secure, and peaceful world of independent states adhering to common standards of justice and international conduct and subjecting the use of force to the rule of law. A world where adjustments to change takes place in accordance with the principles of the United Nations. Under the USSR, no provision. After general and complete disarmament has been achieved, measures to be put into effect for preserving peace and security in accordance with the United Nations Charter. In other words, the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics agreed only to agree once disarmament has occurred. We are disarming, they are not. Under general and complete disarmament, under United States, a world where there shall be a permanent state of general and complete disarmament under effective international control. Under the USSR, general and complete disarmament under strict and effective international controls. Note, in elaborating on this goal, the Soviets reject control of agreed levels of armaments at any stage except after general and complete disarmament has been obtained. of the use of resources, a world where the resources of nations shall be devoted to man's material, cultural, and spiritual advance. That's the United States' goal under the USSR. Part of funds released from expenditure on armaments is to be used for economic assistance to underdeveloped countries. You wonder what's happening? This explains it all, ladies and gentlemen, and tomorrow night we will continue and elaborate in the night after and the night after that. You see, last night's parade of apologists and wimps crying because somebody's going to come after them was pathetic. You see, they've been after us for a long, long time. You need to find your cojones and get ready to fight, if you understand what I mean. If you don't, you better hide in the closet, because the blood is going to run in the streets of America, and it's not far off, ladies and gentlemen. Just remember, we can do nothing, nothing. They must do it first. United States statutes at large containing the laws and concurrent resolutions enacted during the first session of the 87th Congress of the United States of America, treason, 1961, and reorganization plans, amendment to the Constitution and proclamations. Treason is not part of this title. That's my interjection. Volume 75 in one part. Now, if I'm going too fast to write this down, order the tape, and you better order it quick. United States Government Printing Office, Washington, 1961. Public Law 87-297, September 26, 1961, to establish a United States Arms Control and Disarmament Agency. Be it enacted by the Senate and House of Representatives of the United States of America in Congress assembled, Title I, short title, Purpose and Definitions, Section 1, this act may be cited as the Arms Control and Disarmament Act. Lays it all out, ladies and gentlemen, establishes the agency that is to supervise the disarmament of the United States, overseen and inspected by appointed officers of the Soviet Union. United States Arms Control and Disarmament Agency, organization and functions. And ladies and gentlemen, this is dated October 17, 1961. Disarmament Documents Series, United States Arms Control and Disarmament Agency. Resolution adopted by an 87-11 vote in the United Nations General Assembly regarding Soviet 50 megaton bomb number 1632-16-1043, plenary meeting October 27, 1961. The General Assembly, seized with the question of halting nuclear weapons tests, solemnly appeals to the government of the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics to refrain from carrying out its intention to explode in the atmosphere a 50 megaton bomb before the end of this month. That was the scare tactic. The result was a White House statement of October 30th, 1961, calling for world disarmament by the President of the United States. He says, we have no wish ever to use this military power. We are ready now as ever to sign the test ban treaty proposed at Geneva. We are ready now as ever to negotiate a treaty for general and complete disarmament. You see, they have been conducting this in the open in the documentation, but behind closed doors to the public. Disarmament Document Series, United States Arms Control and Disarmament Agency, report to the United Nations Disarmament Commission on the 18-nation Disarmament Committee's deliberations from the beginning of the conference, March 14, 1962, to June 1, 1962. The co-chairman of the conference of the 18-nation Committee on Disarmament, at the request of that conference, transmit herewith to the United Nations Disarmament Commission, pursuant to General Assembly Resolution 1722-16, the following interim progress report on the conference deliberations for the period March 14, 1962 to June 1, 1962. It outlines the participants. It outlines the agreements. It outlines the plenary deliberations. It tells the deliberations and the decisions of the Committee of the Whole, the informal meeting reports, the Subcommittee on a Treaty for the Discontinuance of Nuclear Weapons Tests and the Disarmament of the Nations of the World, and then there are conference documents listed. then Disarmament Document Series, United States Arms Control and Disarmament Agency, text of presidential statement after signing into law the bill, Public Law 87-297, 87th Congress, establishing a United States Arms Control and Disarmament Agency, September 26, 1961. With the signing of H.R. 9118, there is created the United States Arms Control and Disarmament Agency. This act symbolizes the importance the United States places on arms control and disarmament in its foreign policy, the creation for the first time by an act of Congress of a special organization to deal with arms control and disarmament matters, emphasizes the high priority that attaches to our efforts in this direction. Treason. Our ultimate goal, as the Act points out, is a world free from war and free from the dangers and burdens of armaments, in which the use of force is subordinated to the rule of law, and which international adjustments to a changed world are achieved peacefully. It is a complex and difficult task to reconcile through negotiating the many security interests of all nations to achieve disarmament, but the existence of this agency will provide new and better tools for this effort. I am pleased by the bipartisan support this bill enjoyed in the Congress. The leaders of both political parties gave encouragement and assistance. The new agency brings renewed hope for agreement and progress in the critical battle for survival of mankind. Translate: new world, totalitarian, socialist, utopian government. The next one, disarmament, two approaches, a comparison. U.S. and USSR disarmament proposals, United States Arms Control and Disarmament Agency, dated November 1961. Ladies and gentlemen, the United States calls on all states to make a continuous, uninterrupted effort to achieve a total program for general and complete disarmament. Do you understand? USSR, although it has put forward certain proposals apart from its disarmament plan to ease international tensions and create a favorable climate for disarmament, the USSR takes the position, insofar as disarmament measures are concerned, that there must be full agreement on all aspects of general and complete disarmament before implementing a single measure. We are disarming, they are not. And it goes on into the goals that I've already communicated to you. Disarmament, the Continuing Search, by William C. Foster, Director, United States Arms Control and Disarmament Agency. Disarmament, the Continuing Search. Perhaps as you reflect on the news these days, you feel that it is not comfortable to be an inhabitant of this planet. But of course, except for brief periods in history, it never has been comfortable, and for great numbers of people, annihilation by club, arrow, spear, sword, bullet, or what have you, has been a constant threat at one place or another on this relatively small globe. Ladies and gentlemen, it is the United States government and the government of the United Kingdom at the end of World War II that promoted and continues to promote the Holocaust by the Germans in order to instill in the consciousness of the people of the world that disarmament must take place. Whether or not the Holocaust occurred is not the question, and you'd better understand that right now. Of course, to those Jewish people who were in the concentration camps, and who suffered, and who lost family members, and to the Poles, and the Gypsies, and the Blacks, and the Christians, and many, many others, the Holocaust is as real in their minds whether or not it occurred, and get off their back about it. You see, it's not about them, it's about world government. These people are being used to promote it, just like you're being used every day of your life. Blueprint for the Peace Race, outline of basic provisions of a treaty on general and complete disarmament in a peaceful world. United States Arms Control and Disarmament Agency. Not to an arms race, but to a peace race, to advance together step by step, stage by stage, until general and complete disarmament has been achieved. President Kennedy, September 25, 1961. This is from the United States Arms Control and Disarmament Agency, Publication 4, General Series 3, released May 1962. This, ladies and gentlemen, outlines the disarmament of all nations of the world and the combining of the military forces of the United States and Russia under the United Nations as a world police force. It outlines three stages during which this is going to take place. We are at the end now of stage two. In stage three, the civilian populations of the United States and the other countries of the world who still have weapons will be disarmed. Only armament will be left in each country that is sufficient to equip the police force necessary to maintain internal order. Don't believe it? Get it. Read it. Understand it. And stop whining and crying. Join a militia and get ready to fight for your freedoms, or get in the closet and hide until they come and put the chains on you. Because democracy is a code word for socialism. And that's what's coming. Disarmament, the new United States Initiative, United States Arms Control and Disarmament Agency, Publication 8, General Series 5, released September 1962. And this, again, has an introduction, the call for leadership by John J. McCloy, who at that time was the leader or executive director of the Council on Foreign Relations, who outlines the disarmament of the world led by the United States and the Soviet Union, talks about the complexities of disarmament, the Geneva test ban negotiations, the United States' determination to halt the arms race, the disarmament agency, the common market, working toward a world without war and a new world order, history of disarmament negotiations, U.S. proposal for disarmament, need for adequate verification, question of the proper forum, improving United Nations peacekeeping machinery, describing the forces that will be combined by the two major powers to police the world, taking the first steps. United States outlines initial proposals of program for general and complete disarmament by Dean Rusk. Disarmament, a worldwide responsibility. Laying basis for disarmament, U.S. proposals for work of conference, call for early action on testing, etc., 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 etc. The dilemma, how to do it. He says, I appreciate that I am here before a sophisticated audience today. Most of you have read the reports that one Polaris submarine carries more explosive power than all the bombs dropped by both sides during World War II, including the two atomic bombs. Scare statements. You have to understand that the Cold War was a scam to bring this about, and the Soviet Union has recently released publicly the documents which prove that all during the Cold War, their bombers never once carried an atomic weapon. It was a scare tactic to bring this about and fund the development of technology through the willing giving of tax dollars in the face of a Cold War enemy by the American people and the people of the world, to develop the technology to control the people of the world under the New World Order. Toward a world without war, a summary of United States disarmament efforts past and present. United States Arms Control and Disarmament Agency, General Series 6, this is Publication 10, General Series 6, released October 1962. World order will be secured only when the whole world has laid down these weapons which seem to offer us present security but threaten the future survival of the human race. President John F. Kennedy said that in his State of the Union message, January the 11th, 1962, the whole time knowing that there was no threat. Their intercontinental ballistic missiles never were a threat to the United States of America. The American Journal of International Law, Volume 56, 1962, published by the American Society of International Law, Publication Office, Lancaster Press, Incorporated, Lancaster, Pennsylvania, Executive and Editorial Office, 2223 Massachusetts Avenue, Northwest, Washington 8, D.C., copyright 1962. This is the American Journal of International Law, ladies and gentlemen. And in here, it outlines the official documents, disarmament, outline of basic provisions of a treaty on general and complete disarmament in a peaceful world, submitted by the United States delegation to the United Nations Committee on Disarmament, Geneva, April 18, 1962, in which it outlines everything that I have already discussed in an official treaty, ladies and gentlemen, which was signed and which was ratified by the Senate, calling for the complete disarmament of all weapons of all nations. Progressive inspection for disarmament, the concept of progressive zonal inspection. United States Arms Control and Disarmament Agency, Publication 13, released January 1963. This proposes the zonal concept. The extent of inspection is related to amount of disarmament. Amount of assurance is related to degree of risk to parties to the treaty. Principles of disarmament treaty outline. By stages within specified limits. Number two, balanced. No party can gain a military advantage. No party can suffer a loss of security. Three, verified during and after it occurs. The extent of verification is to be related to the amount of disarmament and the degree of risk involved, verification of both arms reduction and arms level. Four, accompanied by progressive strengthening of the United Nations. Accompanied by progressive strengthening of the United Nations. Five, carried out in each successive stage after the decision that all measures in preceding stage will have been accomplished and verified, all arrangements for the next stage are ready to operate. Objects and activities to be verified during disarmament. 1. Destruction of armaments. 2. Conversion of armaments to peaceful uses. 3. Reduction of armed forces. 4. Halting or limiting of declared production, testing, and other specified activities. 5. Agreed levels of armaments and armed forces. 6. Absence of undeclared production, testing, and other specified activities which are subject to termination or limitation. Now remember, ladies and gentlemen, we are a vassal state of the United Nations by treaty and by passage of the United Nations Participation Act. Disarmament is to be balanced, verified under the zonal, progressive zonal inspection plan. Division of national territories into zones. That's what regional government is all about. Declaration to the International Disarmament Organization of total level of armaments, forces, and specified types of activities subject to verification in each zone. Selection of zones for inspection. Declaration to the International Disarmament Organization of the exact locations of armaments, forces, and specified types of activities which are within the zone or zones selected for inspection in that step. Arrangements to assure against undeclared movements of the objects of verification, aerial and mobile ground inspection of objects of verification within the zone selected. 7. Once a zone has been selected and inspected, it remains open for further inspection while verification is being extended to additional zones. 8. When the first zones have been inspected in accordance with an agreed time schedule, arms levels would again be declared as in 2, then the next zone or zones would be selected and inspected as in 4 through 7, and so on. By the end of the final stage, when all disarmament measures have been completed, inspection will have been extended to all zones in the territories of the parties to the treaty. Disarmament is to be carried out within definite time limits by stages, and each stage is divided into three steps. Selection of zones may be, 1, by the International Disarmament Organization, 2, by the non-host Western or Soviet bloc, 3, by random choice, 4, some combination of the above. The breakup of the Soviet Union occurred, ladies and gentlemen, to fool the American people into accepting disarmament, not understanding what this is all about. You see, these people who run the world understand sheeple better than you would ever believe. And you'd better quit being sheeple right this moment. You'd better pull the wool out from over your eyes. Take off that fur coat. Stand up on your own 2 feet. Stop buying. Join a militia. Get ready to fight for your freedoms or lose them all very shortly. Get a book entitled Disarmament Proposals. Published in 1964, the author is Sohn, S-O-H-N, Disarmament Proposals, 1964. Sohn, S-O-H-N, outlines the entire plan, including the disarmament of the individual American common people. Arms Control and National Security, 2nd edition. United States Arms Control and Disarmament Agency, Washington, D.C., 20451. And folks, my throat is dry. I must take a short break. Don't go away. Gentlemen, do us all a favor. Do yourself a favor. Do me a favor. Call Swiss America Trading tonight. That's the extent of the commercial you're going to get, because the information you're getting, in my estimation, is much more important. I'm going to trust you to do this. 1-800-289-2646. 1-800-289-2646. Thank them for the hour of the time. If you're smart, you'll do it. Thank you. Why should it work now if it failed before? Arms Control and National Security, Second Edition. Published by the United States Arms Control and Disarmament Agency, Washington, D.C., 20451. Ladies and gentlemen, listen very carefully. As everyone knows, most attempts at disarmament throughout history have ended in failure. One might wonder, therefore, why any present or future attempts, even at partial disarmament, should be any more successful. After all, the political organization, or disorganization of the world, remains essentially as it has been in past centuries. Despite the existence of the United Nations, power remains polarized at the level of the nation state. So understand that this is not about prevention of war. It's about establishing a world government. It says there is a new factor in the picture, which in the end may outweigh all the others. It is technology. Technology. Even as it has introduced new problems, technology has also brought an unprecedented promise of solutions. In the first place, it has brought an incentive for arms control and disarmament agreements, which historically neither common sense nor statesmanship has ever been sufficient to provide. In the second place, it is equipping us with advanced means of surveillance, thus making politically acceptable agreements which earlier would not have been possible. The 1963 Limited Test Ban Treaty, which prohibits nuclear tests in the atmosphere, underwater, and in outer space, is a case in point. This treaty was made necessary by technology. It also was made possible by technology. It talks about a new approach to security using this technology. It also talks about, ladies and gentlemen, a complete definition of the term arms control with Philip Page. And even then, not everyone would be satisfied. For practical purposes, however, arms control might be summed up as efforts to reduce the likelihood of war and to limit its effects if it occurs. It thus covers a broad spectrum of possible measures. And listen to this. History and advancing technology have combined to make arms control a highly complex subject, calling for the concerted efforts of military men, diplomats, physical and social scientists, jurists, and others. In this same report on page 18, and remember, ladies and gentlemen, this was published when? When was this published? 1970, I believe. I think. Open Skies. The new approach was marked by President Eisenhower's Open Skies Plan in 1955. Which called for reciprocal aerial inspection of the United States and the Soviet Union and the exchange of military blueprints by the two countries. This plan did not meet with acceptance by the Soviets, who said that such aerial surveillance should not be permitted until the last stage of a comprehensive disarmament process. Now remember, it says until the last stage. The Open Skies Treaty was just recently signed, and Russian aircraft overfly the United States to inspect the disarmament of the United States now on a daily basis, and we are overflying what used to be known as the Soviet Union. We are disarming. They are not. According to their policy, they will not until everybody else does, although they say they are. And although our government is fooling us into believe that they are, understand, ladies and gentlemen, it is a scam, because if anything goes wrong, the military might of what used to be known as the Soviet Union will enforce the formation of the New World Order, accompanied by the treasonous military officers of the United States military services, all four of them, who are in total complicity and agreement, and are even now, as we speak, acting as the police force for the New World Order. In this book, 15th Annual Report to the Congress, ladies and gentlemen, the White House, July 29, 1976, by Gerald R. Ford, and somewhere in here there's something important that I was supposed to read to you, and I can't remember where it's at. Let me see if I can get somebody in here to find what I'm looking for while I go on to the next one. What am I looking for in there? Yearbook of the United Nations, 1978, Volume 32, Department of Public Information, United Nations, New York. Disarmament and Related Matters. Chapter 1, down at the third paragraph. The Conference of the Committee on Disarmament held two sessions in Geneva during the year at which it continued its discussions of measures relating to the cessation of the nuclear arms race at any early date and to nuclear disarmament, non-nuclear measures, and other collateral measures, general and complete disarmament, and the organization of its work at its first 1978 session, prepared a special report on the state of the various questions under its consideration and submitted it to the special session of the Assembly. Under the heading, the 10th Special Session of the General Assembly, the 10th Special Session of the General Assembly, the first session to be devoted to disarmament, opened on 23rd May 1978 at the United Nations Headquarters, New York. The Assembly concluded its work in the early hours of 1 July. Earlier during that final meeting on 30 June, it adopted Resolution S-10/2, containing the final document of the 10th Special Session of the General Assembly, comprising an introduction, a declaration, and a program of action, and establishing new international machinery for disarmament. On page 22, it also decided to establish a program of fellowships on disarmament. Implementation of the priorities mentioned in the program should lead to general and complete disarmament under effective international control, the Assembly asserted. And the Committee on Disarmament was to undertake the elaboration of a comprehensive program of disarmament in order to ensure that the goal of general and complete disarmament became a reality in a world in which the new international economic order was strengthened. Tell Rush Limbaugh to wake the hell up. He's a liar. He's a detractor. He's a scam. Necessary measures should be taken to maintain international peace and security, including the obligation of states to place at the disposal of the United Nations agreed manpower for an international peace force equipped with agreed types of armaments to ensure that the United Nations was able to deter or suppress any threat or use of arms in violation of its purposes and principles. General and complete disarmament under strict and effective international control should permit states to have at their disposal only those non-nuclear forces, armaments, and facilities agreed to be necessary for internal order. No New World Order? Rockefeller is not involved? The Trilateral Commission is not involved? Baloney. They admit it in their own publication. Final document. On June 30, 1978, at the end of the special session, the General Assembly adopted Resolution S-10/2, by which it adopted also the final document of the 10th Special Session of the General Assembly, providing a broad platform for further efforts by the United Nations in the field of disarmament, etc., etc., etc. New World Economic Order. New World Order. Words echoed over and over again years ago. The special session must demonstrate to the world that the fundamental principles of the Charter continued to serve as a guiding light for the international community in its quest for a new economic, political, and social order based on equality and justice for all. Limbaugh and all the others know all about this. Resolution S-10/2 is recommended by Ad Hoc Committee of 10th Special Session AS-1023, Part 1, adopted without vote by Assembly on 30th June 1978. Without vote. The nuclear and conventional arms buildup threatens to stall the efforts aimed at reaching the goals of development to become an obstacle in the road of achieving the new international economic order and to hinder the solution of other vital problems facing mankind. Did you find that? Where is it? Right here? Okay. Conference of the Committee on Disarmament, and this is from 15th Annual Report to the Congress, U.S. Arms Control and Disarmament Agency, Publication 88, released July 1976. The Geneva-based Conference of the Committee on Disarmament held two sessions during 1975 that proved to be among the most active in the 13-year history of this principal multilateral forum for arms control negotiations. Its 31 member nations represent a geographic and political cross-section of the world. The representatives of the United States and the Soviet Union serve as co-chairmen. Ambassador Joseph Martin Jr. led the U.S. delegation. The committee's agenda included several new issues that had been referred to it by the 1974 U.N. General Assembly: the question of nuclear weapon-free zones, arms control implications of nuclear explosions for peaceful purposes, and environmental warfare. In addition to the topic of chemical weapons restraints and a comprehensive nuclear test ban, and under environmental warfare, listen to this, the highlight of the sessions was the August 21st tabling by the United States and Soviet representatives of identical texts of a draft, listen to this, identical texts of a draft entitled Convention on the Prohibition of Military or Any Other Hostile Use of Environmental Modification Techniques. And it goes on and on and on. The members of the United Nations are fully aware of the conviction of their peoples that the question of general and complete disarmament is of the utmost importance, and that peace, security, and economic and social development are indivisible, and they have therefore recognized that the corresponding obligations and responsibilities are universal. Conventional weapons control, and this again from the 15th Annual Report to the Congress. During the spring session, Ambassador Martin urged that the committee explore practical means of restraining the worldwide competition in conventional arms. Conventional arms. That means your rifle. In addition to reiterating the United States' willingness to assist in the establishment of conventional arms control arrangements on a regional basis, Ambassador Martin set forth for the committee's consideration principles applicable worldwide to the acquisition and transfer of conventional arms. These principles are discussed in greater detail in the chapter on arms transfers. That program, passing through all the necessary stages, should lead to general and complete disarmament under effective international control. Notice, folks, it does not say partial disarmament. It does not say disarmament of military forces. And remember, in an early publication, it even included the police. It says complete disarmament. Complete disarmament. Genuine and lasting peace can only be created through the effective implementation of the security system provided by the Charter of the United Nations and the speedy and substantial reduction of arms and armed forces by international agreement and mutual example, leading ultimately to general and complete disarmament under effective international control. That's why bases are closing, but not closing. They're closing, but not closing. They were said to close to save money, and then they don't close and spend money to establish those bases as prisons and mental treatment centers to treat, ladies and gentlemen, patriots under the New World Order who will be considered to be primitives. Klingons, if you will, Klingons, who refuse to adapt to the New World Socialist Order. They will be called mentally ill. On page 45, under the Yearbook of the United Nations, 1978, it talks about, where is it? The study should be made in the context of how disarmament can contribute to the establishment of the new international economic order. No new world order, no new world economic order, no plot, no complicity of the Council on Foreign Relations, the Trilateral Commission, the members of Congress, the members of the executive branch of government. Anyone who tells you that is a liar. They are part of the problem. They are part of the enemy. They are leading you down the garden path. Remember, the symbol of international socialism is the red rose. It was the symbol of the Rose and Cross, which came out of the ancient mysteries which were suppressed. Suppressed between the cold north wind. The snow were the seed planted by the adepts concealing their true religion, their true philosophy. Wait for the spring thaw, when the rising sun and the generative force, the phallus, will regenerate the old pagan religions under the guise of a new one world religion and one world totalitarian socialist government. Freedom will die forever. There will be no rapture. No benevolent space brothers will come to save you, for that is one of the deceptions also. Good night. God bless you all. And if I'm still alive tomorrow night, we will continue. God save the Republic.
It's the dream.